Hey guys, welcome to the Evan and Caitlin podcast, the podcast that is in its 23rd week without an intro we feel good about.
It's okay. I guess that proves the point.
We're struggling to come up with things to say after the show. The show that, you know?
Yeah, well, didn't we like abandon it for a while?
We did abandon it for a while.
Or you would just like randomly start recording when I was still on my phone.
Yeah, that was it. I got
that
it a few times.
That was the new series. Yeah. Evan records before Caitlin's ready.
Well, welcome everyone. Hopefully there are a few new people here because we're going to try to push this to a broader audience because we have been getting like the request to make this episode for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of things to say here.
We do. So much that we've given a couple talks on it already.
Yeah.
At events and such. So.
Yeah. Well, if you're new, welcome. Hello. I'm Evan.
I'm Caitlin.
I guess that was kind of obvious. We make videos on YouTube. We have our main channel where we do a lot of making. We have a gaming channel. We have this podcast channel. And who knows? We might start another channel one day.
Don't commit to anything.
Who knows? Who knows? The possibilities are endless. So for our regular listeners, this podcast is going to be a little bit different. We are going to be going kind of like really in depth into one subject.
It's probably going to be a longer podcast and we probably won't have time for a game on this one.
No story times, no like topics.
Just get ready
no
to be Q&As. Disappointed.
No, get super excited because this is something that we talk about all the time. The two of us.
So much. This is most of what we talk about.
It's a lot. It's in our heads a lot. We also talk about it all the time to all of our friends that we've made in this space. I mean, we
if
probably
you talk
see
to
our
any
fellow
YouTuber, they probably talk about this a lot.
We've probably seen our fellow content creators more than most of our other friends recently, just because we've like dove so deep into this world. So we are going to be sharing like how to start your YouTube channel. There's a lot of tips that we picked up, how to grow your YouTube channel and then how to monetize.
Yeah, so this should be a three-part series. Are we breaking this into three parts?
No, it's all one episode.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's just one long episode.
Oh, gosh, okay. I thought this was a three-part
Get excited, Caitlin.
I'm excited. Okay, I have my water. I'm prepared. I don't have my chapstick. It's not in reach. Uh-oh.
We can take a break midway through.
Okay, chapstick break. Okay, I'm already feeling chapped.
But also, like, going more in-depth into, like, overview of what we're going to be talking about. We're going to, like, go over how to decide what content to make. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, because I feel like a lot of people jump to how to grow.
Yeah, but there's all these foundational things that I feel like you need to figure out before you can start implementing strategies to grow. Because the strategies are not the same across the board. And
yeah, they're completely dependent on like what you're making. And that, like, once you know what you're making and your approach to YouTube, that will guide everything else. Like, what equipment you get, what schedule you need to keep. Like,
how you promote your videos and where you promote your videos. Yeah, and should you promote your
videos? Where your communities are. It's like, that is the foundation upon which you will build your entire career. If you turn this into a career, who knows? Mm-hmm. Or you could just be doing this for fun. We can cover that too. Mm-hmm. But like, that's the most important part. And that's what we put so much of our thought into, even now.
Yeah.
You know, and we're continually like shifting and adjusting that like base upon which we're standing.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go into tips for making the content itself.
Yep. Some tips for making the content. Some tips also for the actual launch of your channel, because that's another thing we put a lot of time and thought into was the strategies behind that. And then we'll get into growth and how to grow it, which is probably the part we get asked most about.
Yeah. But then also, like, if you're going to turn this into a career, you have to have some sort of a strategy on how to monetize. And there are plenty of ways to monetize. And probably the best is to do all of them.
Well, I mean, I would say try all of them.
Try all
Maybe
of them.
Maybe don't do all of them.
Try all of them. See what works best for you and your audience. And try going into monetization fairly early, I think. Oh, we'll get into that later. Yeah,
that's part three. I mean, that's not
part three of this podcast.
Of this episode, okay. Stretch it out. Prepare yourself.
All right. So I think that like why we want to give this talk in particular is because we started our channel with intent to make it a business. We wanted to like work together. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be together. So from the beginning, we put these strategies into place.
Yeah, and I think like if you talk to a lot of different channels, especially people who today are successful back when they started. A lot of people just started it kind of for fun or just as a hobby. And, you know, back then, being a full-time YouTuber wasn't as common of a career. So a lot of people didn't have that in mind. And so sometimes people did have strategies for growth, but sometimes it just kind of, they fell into it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Not that they weren't working hard to work on their channel, but it might not have been the immediate priority from day one. And I think those like immediate strategies are the hardest to figure out, because once you have growth, you know, it's
you have that
momentum. Yeah. It self-fuels. Mm. So because we started from that zero subscriber mark with making it a business in mind, I think we have some good strategies for other people that are starting at that beginner mark.
Yeah. And on the topic of monetization, we went full time by 80,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah. That's and, two people quitting their jobs.
Two people quitting their jobs, and our bank account didn't like suffer tremendously. You know, and it wasn't a bad decision, because I know some people just like trust that they're going to be caught by the community and trust that they'll grow in the future. But we were able to go full time at 80,000
Without too much risk. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of dive into that. And we're going to keep all of these tips as broad as possible, so that no matter what type of channel you are, if you, you know, are make your
Daniel.
If you're a maker channel like us, or if you're going into like beauty or gaming or whatever you're most excited about, it should be applicable for all of those different types of channels. Okay, so what type of content are you going to make? The most important thing of this entire talk. Go.
Oh, me? Now?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, so when we're thinking about what types of content you can choose to make from, are you looking at me really close? I just saw you in the, like, yes, in the camera. Was.
Sorry for anyone just listening to the audio of this.
Yes, Evan's being weird. So when we think about where your content can fall and what type of content to make, we almost kind of picture it in like a 2x2 matrix.
Yeah.
On one end, you have educational content versus entertainment content, and all, you know, the varying mixed percentages in between.
Yeah.
On the other axis, you have broad content versus niche content, and, you know, the variations in between. And
I think that giving some examples of each would be kind of useful. So yes. Entertainment, that might be comedy or video games or vlogs or beauty. They're primarily like shared and enjoyed in different like ways, as opposed to education.
People watch it for fun.
Yeah. My words are good.
Yeah, your words are really good. Whereas education would be like 3D modeling tutorials, or how to boil an egg, or how to sew on a button.
Well, but those are very specific things. In general, like science, video essays, and DIY type of contents are like the general categories of...
I don't feel like you can just say that that's education, because a lot of the science and DIY and video essays I think of are more entertainment than education.
Mm-hmm. True. But, well, broad and niche content. This is an easier classify. I think we can agree on this. So like making and DIY are like a broader category, but like within that you can go into woodworking or metalworking or welding.
Or within that you could, instead of just doing woodworking, you could do hand tools only.
Yeah. So you can kind of like keep on focusing it down, or on the more like general categories, you can do vlogging. But then within that, there's niches of travel vlogging. And within that, there's niches of travel vlogging in foreign countries. And within that, there's like, you
know, travel vlogging in foreign countries with kids.
Yeah. So there's like, you can kind of niche down again and again and again. Even within comedy, you can have like comedy, or you can have skit comedy. And
or you can have like video game themed skit comedy. Yeah.
And like where you start the channel is really, really important, because it's painful and difficult to change later on.
Yeah, it's not impossible, because we've
it's not impossible.
But there's growing pains. Yes.
And there's advantages to all four of these like quadrants, you know? So with entertainment, I think that you have probably one of the broadest audiences.
Yeah, so like the highest growth ceiling, I would say.
The highest growth ceiling. And with education, a lot of people seem to want to watch education videos, but they just don't in total get viewed as much.
Unless they have a heavy dose of entertainment.
Yes, yes. So it's like, again, on that spectrum. And with broad content, I think it's great because it allows you a lot of flexibility. You know, like, especially like if like, you know, YouTube, the YouTube landscape changes. Because, like, if you started a Minecraft video game channel a while ago, you might have found, like, really good growth and success. But then if Minecraft fades in popularity or gains popularity, then you're going to struggle to change.
Yeah. You know?
But if you had a general gaming channel, then you could grow. And same with any of these different topics.
Yeah. And I will go back a little bit. One thing you said earlier is that, like, education videos don't get watched as much. And I think, like, in total, they probably might.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, that is still a huge reason people go to YouTube. But I think, like, for any individual education channel, especially if you have a lower amount of entertainment mixed in, like, I'm just going to take it to the extreme. Let's say you're just 100% education. There's no fluff. There's no funny commentary. It's just learning how to do the thing. I think you're going to have a smaller audience for that specific thing. And when you're doing education, I feel like, especially if it's, you know, there's not entertainment mixed in, you have to kind of be more of an expert in the thing you're doing. And yes, you're not likely to be an equal expert in, like, how to, I don't know, keep plants alive or how to powder coat your Yeti and how to build a computer, you know? So, like, you're probably going to be a little bit more niche by nature unless you are mixing in entertainment. And then, like, how well you know your topic is...
Doesn't matter as much, which is one thing we've leaned on.
Yeah, we can be less experts because we're not telling people what to do.
Yeah, we're showing people how we did something and in a hopefully entertaining way.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think that one advantage that education really does have is it provides an immediate kind of tangible value to the viewer.
Which I think is easier when you're starting out. Because if you just start out from day one and you're like, hey, I'm vlogging.
And I'm funny.
And I'm a funny person. I feel like people will look at you with your zero subscribers and your one video and be like, who's this person? I don't care what you're having for lunch.
Yeah, but if you're like contributing.
And of course people can, like, you know, there are breakout successes. But I feel like for a lot of channels that are more entertainment based, it helps to kind of, like, build upon that, and it might be a little harder to start from the very beginning.
Yeah, and same with kind of niche and broad content. I think that if you choose a niche, especially if it's one that's seeing a lot of growth right now, you can experience a lot of growth right away.
Yeah,
because
you can be a bigger fish in a smaller pond.
Yeah, so like Simone Yurt says, the biggest way to stand out in your field is to create a whole new field.
Yes.
And then you are immediately the expert in that field. Yes. You know, so it's like the more niche you are, the more you can stand out. But hopefully you choose a niche and you go about it in a way that doesn't limit you in the long term. Because the broader category you kind of fall under, the more you can kind of grow and change and evolve over time. Whereas if you really niche down, it might be harder to grow outside of that niche.
And I think some of it just depends on, like, knowing yourself. You know, so when we started our channel, we knew we wanted to make stuff. So that was kind of committing to a category somewhat, but it was a very broad category. But we knew we would want to bounce around and try a bunch of new things all the time. So from day one, we really varied the types of maker videos that we did. But you might be someone who is like, I have been collecting rocks my entire life, and I would feel no greater pleasure than to share my love of rocks with the world for the rest of my life. And you know your thing, and that's rocks.
It sounds like you're a completely different type of person who just loves rocks. I'm convinced now. Tell me more about rocks.
See, my passion. It came through with the rocks. Yes. And that kind of goes to something else, is like, make videos about things you're passionate about.
Yeah, that's a huge bit of advice.
It sounds really cliche, but it's kind of like what you were saying earlier with the Minecraft videos. If you only do something to chase a trend, trends change.
Yep.
And it's not guaranteed that that's always going to be successful. And just, again, like we were saying with change is kind of hard to make. And so if you end up getting yourself stuck doing a certain type of videos simply because you thought they would be successful, but then the trend changed and you're like, well, I don't want to do this anymore. That's going to suck. Yeah.
And the reason why it changes hard is because consistency is really important. The viewer that has subscribed to you kind of needs to know what to expect. And hopefully they know what to look forward to. Mm-hmm. And like if when you push that publish button and it goes out to your subscribers, you want every single one of them, or as many as possible, to be really excited to watch it. Because if you build up a subscriber base around an expectation of one thing and then you change and then you're providing them a different thing, mm-hmm. they won't click it as much. And then YouTube will take that as a sign that your content isn't good, mm-hmm. because YouTube can't know everything. All they can see are numbers and data. And when your viewers and your subscribers are sending YouTube data that your video isn't good, that's that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think when it comes to consistency, don't make that, that doesn't mean that you have to follow the exact same recipe for every single video. And there are channels that do that and do that successfully. But it just means that there needs to be some element that is consistent.
Yeah.
So, for us, you know, our projects vary, but they're almost always projects, and,
there's always the two of us
and we're always being pretty goofy. That part has changed because we started out more on the educational side with a dose of goofiness, and now we're like goofy with a dose of education.
That's true.
But I think as long as there's some elements that are consistent.
And you can find your own consistent elements. Like maybe it's your editing style. Maybe mm-hmm. it's your filming style. Your mm-hmm. cinematics are always like off the charts crazy. Or you always have this dry sense of humor in the voiceover. Or whatever it is. There can be a lot of different things that are consistent that tie all of your videos together. So like like Caitlin said, like find what you're most passionate about, but also lean into the things that make you kind of weird or unique or quirky or whatever it is. Like think about like what you were known for at this job or in high school or within a certain group of friends, and kind of like lean into that part of your identity mm-hmm. to kind of like tie everything together. Or if you don't want to put a personality in, then that can be your thing too.
Be part of your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
So another thing is just do a lot of research. We still watch a lot of YouTube, and it's all very important research.
Very important.
but seriously, like watch a lot of stuff. Pay attention to why you're watching it. Pay attention to, is it the person's personality? Is it like great cinematography? Is it really good storytelling? And pick what elements you like, and you can mix and match those into your own type of content. Or you can just use that research to like learn best practices in the type of content you want to do. Like, let's say you want to do cooking videos. Mm-hmm. You might watch some Binging with Babish. You might watch Bon Appetit. You know, you can start seeing the things that are consistent between the channels you like that seem to do well.
Yeah.
And you can, don't just watch like really good channels. You can also watch kind of like smaller channels and see like what you would change. And that's like a really good practice to get into.
Yeah. And I think that another thing that really helps with figuring out how to develop your own unique style, let's say that you really like Binging with Babish and his general aesthetic or something, and you pull a lot from there, but then you also watch like this vlog channel that has this thing that you think is hilarious to pull in, or you watch this gaming channel and they do a lot of, you know, special effects or noises or sound effects. You can kind of like pull like a lot of different inspiration from different types of channels. So sometimes watching videos that are outside of the mm-hmm. niche mm-hmm. that you are trying to get into will really help like diversify your content and make you stand out.
Yeah.
And find what resonates with you. Don't just say like, oh, this one gets a lot of views. This one gets a lot of views. I'm just going to do that. No. Like find
it needs to be genuine.
Yeah. Cause if you are setting this up as a career, you might be doing this for the rest of your career. And if you don't like it, it's not sustainable. I know we're going to be saying this a lot, but I think we just need to hit on this point. It's like repetition is the key to learning. Right now, for those of you listening, we're just pretending to hit things with a hammer.
Yes, repeatedly. It's just like in our videos.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So for one example, I think that a lot of people are inspired by Casey Neistat.
Yeah, I mean, his cinematography is awesome. His storytelling is awesome. And you might think like, wow, that looks so fun. I want to do that. But then you start filming and you realize, wow, making content almost every day is really hard. It's really hard to make my life interesting. As fun as it looks when he's doing it, it's kind of stressful to me because I'm just eating cereal today and it's not that exciting. You know?
Yeah, I'm not in New York.
I'm not in New York. Running a company of my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's like not everyone can make that type of content, you know?
Yeah.
And you might get bored of it. Like, let's say that you mm-hmm. like start committing to daily content, people expect that, and then you get bored or tired, you know? So it's like set yourself up for the sustainable long term right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think
I was going to say, and like, know that things probably will change, and we'll probably talk about change a little bit later as well. But definitely do your research so that you go into it the best you can.
Yeah. All right. With all of that covered, now we're going to talk about how to start making your content. Not how to grow yet, but like tips for how to start. Because I think that this is a huge barrier for a lot of people. They know they want to make YouTube content.
Yeah, they've done the brainstorming. They watched a whole lot of YouTube.
And they're still watching a whole lot of YouTube, hopefully. Watch our channel too, maybe a little bit. Sorry. But I mean, you know, like how to start. It's really intimidating because it's not that natural of a thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. So I think, you know, putting yourself out there, first off, just talking to a camera is weird. Putting yourself out there on the internet feels really weird. And so if this is intimidating to you and that's what's holding you back, but you still want to do YouTube, I think one thing that you can do is start practicing on a less intimidating platform. So let's say you're making stuff and you want to start a maker channel, but that's very scary. You can start posting your projects on Instagram. And I think that's awesome because, or for a few reasons. One, taking an Instagram photo is generally going to take a lot less work than recording and editing an entire video.
So, a lot less.
So there's less time commitment. Two, you can even if you are doing little videos, it's like a 1 minute max. So you're kind of capped in terms of how much you're expected to put out there. Three, you can start finding your voice and kind of like practicing in this, you know, this little like training wheels kind of stage.
And finding your voice, not only just like literally speaking, but like writing and your style.
Yeah,
and
your style.
Like how you engage with the community and all of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into it.
Well, and that's the next thing too, is you can start building your own community so that when you do launch your YouTube channel, you have a community, like a group of people to launch it to. So you're not just starting from scratch. You already kind of have people that you've been interacting with.
And like making a YouTube video takes so much longer than whatever you were going to make the YouTube video about. So if we're making a thing and a video at the same time, it takes twice as long. Going to the store and you're going to be filming a vlog about your day, you're going to get half as much done because filming takes so much time.
Yeah, well, and then there's editing too.
And then there's editing. So it's like also it's like with Instagram, you can kind of soft launch different ideas mm-hmm. and see what ideas really stand out in the community. And you can go through a whole bunch more things in that form faster mm-hmm. and find your footing in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also like the fear of being on camera can be very intimidating. And so a few tips to make that less scary is you can just record a video with no intent of putting it online. You can just record it. You can edit it. And it's
that's what we did with two of our vlogs.
We did. And then we ended up posting them. But it takes a lot of the pressure off. You're going to be more natural on camera because you're not worrying about, oh my God, everyone's going to see this. And like, can they tell that I'm sweating? You know? So it just takes a lot of the pressure off and gives you practice. And yes, it might seem like you're putting all this work into something that nobody sees. But hey, if it turns out awesome, you can use it as one of your videos. But there's no pressure on it.
Yeah. I mean, awesome. We were so awkward at the beginning. Like looking back at our first video. Oh my gosh. We were just like putting handles on an IKEA dresser. And it took us so many takes. I swear the intro to that video took us 3 hours of filming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did it so many times and we just left the camera running
the whole time. It was a lot of footage. It was so much footage. And also like, I think that one thing that's important to keep in mind is you can decide not to be on camera too much.
Yeah.
Like being on camera isn't like a necessity to make a YouTube video.
Yeah. I mean, think of like ClickSpring.
Yeah.
For example, he does really satisfying machining videos, tons of followers. He's not really in his videos.
It's just his stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that another thing that like, because YouTube, like a lot of YouTube is like bubbly and a lot of personality and like generally pretty positive. I mean, we're pretty positive people, but that doesn't mean that needs to be who you are. There's this one channel that I kind of love. It's like a cartoon animated channel, and the narrator is just kind of grumpy the whole time. He's grumpy. He has like kind of a harsh sense of humor, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So like, you don't need to be a certain type of something in order to find success. One thing that we've learned over time that's really important to creating a YouTube video is figuring out like the format of the video, like what your story is before you start recording. Then you know kind of what to record, what to time lapse through, what to talk about, and kind of like how to shape it all from the beginning. And if you kind of know the story and the arc, it's so much less stressful than just like starting and filming everything.
Yeah. And I think it's something that in the beginning, it's probably easier if you actually formally write down this stuff. And towards the end, you can, or once you have more practice, it can be a little looser. You can keep track of it more in your head. But for example, our channel, there's kind of a built-in story arc with every video because we are making something in almost every video. So there's,
you start with raw materials and then you end up with a thing.
And yeah, there's like trials and tribulations along the way. So that part was decided, but in the beginning, we would actually write down a shot list, everything we needed.
A shot list and like general words we wanted to say. Sometimes even just like 100% scripting it out.
Because it was mostly voiceover.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we might happen to capture some in the moment stuff, but we planned the voiceover and we planned the shots.
That's so crazy to think back and remember, because I remember like not liking like voiceover session
where I
sat down and I recorded lines. I did not like that.
It would take you a really long time.
Because I am bad at like...
Well, here's the thing. Because I would edit it and I would do my own voiceover for the whole thing just so I could keep going on the edit and I didn't have to keep grabbing you. And then I would choose like, okay, which voiceover spots should Evan take?
Yeah.
But I talk a lot faster than you. And we would have the video perfectly timed to the music. So I couldn't like extend a scene. So I'd be like, okay, Evan say, next we're going to glue down the thing and then we're going to wrap the edges and then we're going to do this thing to this thing. And you're like, next we're going to glue down the thing. I'm like, no, next we're going to glue down the thing.
Faster.
faster. And so it was like such a struggle to say your words at the pace that I was saying my words.
But see, that's something that we started with. That was our crutch for a while and then we evolved past that. So
we did.
Yeah.
We did. We evolved. But I think it can be helpful to kind of storyboard out your video.
Yeah.
Especially
like
in the beginning.
Having a beginning, middle, and end. Like having a conclusion really helps a video stand out in someone's mind. You know, it's like, oh, I watched that and they did this to this. Like, even if there's like mini plot points within your videos, you know, like try to set things up. And I think one way to set things up is you predict something, you do the thing, and then you react afterwards. And that's like kind of a pretty easy template you can apply to almost any type of video.
Yeah. So it's like if we are about to do a resin pour, we will chit-chat, say how we think it's going to go, then we do it. And as we're doing it, we're reacting to how it's actually going. So like predictions and reactions are a huge way to add story as opposed to just like doing the thing and not saying anything about it.
Or even if like you're a travel vlogger, let's say that you're going to this place and you're telling the camera like, man, I've heard about this place. I hear it's the best pizza in the entire world. And you get there and you try it and then you react. Is it actually the best pizza in the world or is it actually really bad?
Yeah, and then, there's so much story there, so much more story there than if you just went and you're like, and I had pizza at this place. It wasn't great. But if you were like, I'm going to like the highest rated pizza place in this city. And then you go and you're like, you know, it really didn't live up to my expectations.
Or,
there's so much more story there.
This is the best pizza I've ever had in my entire world. I am part
in
of the club.
My entire world.
I am good at words.
Yeah. So it adds a lot more. And again, that may not be applicable if you're doing like strictly educational based stuff. But I think you can even take some hints of that and apply it to education. Like if you're doing a cooking channel or a cooking video and you're like, okay, this is where you flip the pancake. And so if it's not cooked enough, it's going to fall apart. If it's cooked too much, it's going to be burnt on the bottom. So let's flip it and see. You flip it. See, it cracked a little bit. That means it's, you know.
Yeah, and you can teach. Or like, let's say you're teaching welding. There's a lot of things you can teach from like saying how it's going to go and then pointing out the flaws in what you just did or whatever.
Yeah. It's, you know, not, it's same, but different.
Same, but different. Yeah, that's true. But also it's like one way to like this is like kind of like a little hack on how to make your videos more entertaining. If you're going after that, you can just put yourself in interesting or funny situations, which is one thing we picked up from William Osman when we did collaborations with him.
It's our like very first collaboration.
Our very first collaboration.
Yeah, we were definitely putting ourselves in funny situations. But yeah, that's a great way to kind of just think like, okay, what would be funny? I'll just do that thing.
Yeah, even if it's like slightly uncomfortable, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we've like taken, you know, we made DIY super soakers and we took them to the park.
Because that's going to be a lot more.
That's going to be funnier.
Yeah, it's like more can happen there than if we're just in our backyard.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a wedding in the background, which was like kind of hilarious.
Yeah, there was a wedding. I wonder if we're in some pictures.
That'd be awesome. That'd make my day.
That would be pretty funny. Hey, they're the ones that had their wedding at a public park with lots of other people around.
They were asking for a water gun fight in the background.
It wasn't just us like disrupting a wedding. There's also like kids playing Pokemon Go and all sorts of stuff.
Well, I think that can like transition us into pacing tips.
Pacing. I think this is probably one of the hardest things to figure out.
It's really hard to communicate. You watch a video and you're like, it's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like sometimes you can say, it's a little slow. Or sometimes you can say, oh, they rushed through that too fast. But it's hard to touch on like why something is just right.
Yeah. And I think that the reason why pacing is so, so important to get right is because YouTube videos are people's active time. They're usually like, you know, on their phone, just looking at the phone, looking at the video, or they're on their couch, or they're like researching, they just punched a hole in the wall or something and they're looking at how to fix it and they just want to fix it.
Evan's referencing to our how to patch a drywall video, which was one of our very first ones. And a lot of people comment, I just punched a hole in my wall. Thanks.
A lot of people. We get those comments like quite a lot.
I'm very angry people.
So it's like this is people's active time. So
opposed to like a podcast where it's kind of passive listening, where people can be driving to work or making dinner or doing yard work and they're listening. It's like we have room to mess banter up and be a little slower with our delivery.
Okay, then people just turned you up to 2x speed.
Be a little slower with our delivery.
But I think that like general tips that we can give to kind of get you started along that direction, you can cut out dead spaces. Like don't leave in these long moments and lingering pauses. Now you don't want to go too far with all the jump cuts, because I think that's some people do that. Like Philip DeFranco, I think does a lot of jump cuts.
I think I'm going to backtrack a bit.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to say cut out all your dead space. I'm not going to say jump cuts are bad. I'm going to say make sure you have a balance of like have the video be slower when it needs to be slower and faster when it needs to be faster. So if you're having a heart to heart with the camera and you're saying, you know, I'm about to try this really hard step or I'm about to do this challenging thing. Here is why I'm scared to do this and I'm a little nervous and this could happen and this could happen. You want to leave in your dramatic pauses.
Yeah. I'm just imagining good jump cuts through all of that. It'd be horrible.
Yeah, it would be terrible. It would totally lose the effect. You know, and then you do the thing and maybe there's not too many dramatic cuts. You do the thing and you just see how it goes and it's terrible. And then, so you have to do it 5 more times to get it right. Those 5 more times, you speed through those.
Yeah.
You know, just I know this is kind of vague because I'm just talking about some miscellaneous thing that you were doing on this video, but there's definitely times where you want it to be slower and times where it makes sense to just like get to the goods.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that also, like, even with comedy, pauses with comedy can be
some of the best moments.
I was pausing for effect.
Oh, sorry.
Caitlin just like ruined my comedic moment.
I'm sorry.
My genius.
Do you want another?
No. It's gone. The moment has passed. Yeah. So I think that...
Another way to kind of like keep the pace up, because part of it is about timing, like slower versus faster, but part of it is mixing up the type of footage. So if you have a mix of... you know, talking points where you're like a talking head talking to the camera mixed with B-roll, mixed with time lapse. that's going to help keep the pacing up, as opposed to if the entire video is just talking heads, which, I mean, we're doing that, but this is a podcast. So,
yeah, so it's different.
If you're watching, you could also be listening right now.
Yeah.
Duh. Anyways.
But I think that one thing where it's really, really important, and this is kind of going into kind of SEO type analytical type things, but the intro and the outro are by far the most important parts of a YouTube video, because the intro, that's where you try to catch people, pull them in.
That's, and the
outro,
most.
You don't want to lose them too frequently, because if someone makes it all the way through your video and to another video, they didn't exit on your video. They're exiting on someone else's video. So, like,
yeah. So we've even noticed some channels have super abrupt endings.
It's just like they're talking, and then,
and it's
the,
like,
video ended, and you made it 100% of the way through, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't want to go too far down the hacky way, but, like, in general,
but, like, for example,
keep down the asks. Don't ask too many things at the end. And
or the intro.
Or the intro.
Definitely don't ask too many things at the intro.
Oh, no.
Whenever I, because we follow some, like, you know, YouTube-related subreddits, and one of the most common pet peeves when people are asking for advice is when people have all their asks up front in the intro.
Yeah.
When people are, like, asking you to subscribe and like and ring the bell before they've even started the video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no.
It's interesting.
No.
And when it comes to actually filming all this stuff, one tip that we have found really helpful is to edit either in your head or for real as you go. And this is, some people do this and some people don't. We've tried it both ways, where we film the entire video and then we edit it. Or we've done where we film a couple hours and then we edit, and then we film a couple hours and we edit. And we like the latter because I feel like it helps us with pacing. It's a little bit easier to actually edit it as you go. And then you know, like, well, I just spent a whole lot of time talking, so this next part, I should kind of speed through it a little bit.
Yeah, or like let's say you try to say something four times and you know in your head the very first part of the first take was good and the last part of the last take was good.
Yeah, so then you don't have to keep that information in your head. You can just, like, go slap those two parts together and then keep going.
Yeah, because you don't want, like, too much in your head while you're trying to make and film and everything. And honestly, in the beginning, you're probably going to film way too much. I know we did.
Yeah.
And I think that in a way, it's almost a little bit easier to film too much. Odd kind of err on the side of filming a little bit too much rather than too little. Because you're not going to go back. Yeah, in the beginning, it will take longer and you will film more than you need. Mm-hmm. And, like, going back to the pacing, you have to be a little bit brutal on the editing floor. You, like, even if, like, you thought you did, like, a really clever shot and took a long time, but it just doesn't work in the edit,
you got to be brutal with yourself.
You got to be brutal. You got to cut that out, you know?
Yeah. And I think one thing you can do, well, maybe this is getting a little ahead of myself. Sometimes it's hard to know yourself, especially when you've been, like, editing for forever.
Yeah.
And you've been,
I know
you've
Caitlin
re-watched
gets in these, like, fugues.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I go into editing fugue state. You've rewatched the same scene 20 times, and the things that made you chuckle the first time, like, you don't crack a smile at the 20th time, and you're like, I have no idea if this is good anymore. So it really helps to have somebody else that you can show the video to that hasn't been as deep in the edit as you have.
That's me.
That's Evan.
Because Caitlin does all of our editing.
It's true. But it could be, like, a family member or a friend, or, oh my gosh, if you have, like, a kid you can show it to, they're going to be the most brutally honest.
Yeah.
You just see when they look away, and you're like, well.
Well, that's when we lost them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that takes us all the way to gear and technical. I think that we get a lot of questions about this too, and I think it's less important than people think. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we just don't want to, like, say, it's not important, and, like, skip over it. We'll give some, like, actual advice on this.
Tips. Yeah,
some tips.
I think the biggest tip is that, like, the thing that matters most is audio.
By far.
By far.
Yeah.
You can get away with pretty crappy video as long as your audio is okay. And I think the reason why is because, like, watching subpar video doesn't necessarily, like, hurt your eyes. It just might be slightly annoying. But listening to bad audio actually, like, annoys you.
Yeah, and also, like if it's too loud or not clear enough, or it's too soft, or there's too much background noise, it's just, like, I just can't
annoying.
Do it. And most people can't do it.
Yeah, it's
They'll
annoying.
Just leave.
Yeah, they're not going to forgive you. It doesn't matter what you're doing if the audio is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, you know, along those lines, even if you're just starting with your phone, you can get, like, a shotgun mic.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a lav mic. But, like, start there. If you're going to, like, really get going on a YouTube channel, start with audio.
And I think, like, you know, it's hard to, if we just list a bunch of products we use, it's kind of hard to retain audibly. Yeah, so I think we'll
list it all in the description below.
Yeah, we'll put it all in the video description with links to all the stuff that we use.
But also, like, think about, again, it all goes back to what type of content you're making. Like, do you need 4K? Do you need autofocus? Do you need stabilization? Do you need that flip lens for that selfie mode? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that, like, will be decided by what type of content you're making.
That is very true.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, if you're doing, if you're vlogging, well, I'll just look at that. Yeah. Right.
Caitlin, you can talk about editing a little bit. There's not that much to share, though.
No. I mean, people ask us what we use. We use Premiere.
good story.
We use Premiere. There's tutorials online. I would suggest just kind of learning a few very, very basic basics. Like, when I say basic, I mean, like, how to cut clips and how to drag them. That's pretty much all you need to get started with editing. How to just cut the clip and how to drag it on the timeline.
Yeah, and you can do that in almost any program. There's a lot of free ones out there, too.
And everything else, don't worry about, like, learning everything perfectly. Just if you come across something that you need to figure out, just YouTube search it, and there will be a tutorial on it. And you can figure it out as you go.
Yeah, and in terms of music, there are some really good resources we can share. Yeah, so... YouTube Audio Library is probably going to be the first place we're going to recommend people to go. Mm-hmm. It's huge. There are so many songs that so many people use.
And sound effects, too.
And sound effects. And they're all, like, they won't get flagged by YouTube system because they're in YouTube system.
So that's the safest.
So that's the safest place to go.
There's also places where you can license music. And those are great. Sometimes they will still get flagged because or the person flagging it doesn't know that you have, you know, bought the license to it. So things, you know, I mean, we've used Audio Blocks. There's also one awesome resource.
Awesome. Like, so many YouTubers use his sound and his music. It's amazing.
It's so a website, again, we'll link to all of these. Incompetech is the website, incompetech.com. The man's name is Kevin McLeod. Thank you, Kevin. He has so much music. It's amazing. Most of our songs are his these days.
I want to look up an interview now and just, like, see what his life is.
A gift of a person to put so much music out there for people to use.
Yeah.
Another awesome place is Patreon. Mm-hmm. So, We have found a couple artists that we really, really liked on SoundCloud. And a lot of times people will give out their music for free on SoundCloud if you, like, properly credit them. But a lot of times those artists also have Patreon, and you can get songs that aren't listed on SoundCloud or, like, more convenient downloads of their stuff where you can download a whole album instead of tracks individually and things like that. And I think that's a great resource because then you're also, like, supporting someone.
Yeah.
So,
I think we should talk about branding now. And again, it seems like Caitlin's going to be, like, telling you most of the things because she is the expert at all of the things we've talked about so far. I'm like, what am I doing on this channel? Like, Caitlin, share your experience on all these things. I'll cue you up.
You know a lot of stuff. Okay. So now we're kind of moving away from the how to figure out what kind of content to make and how to make it to how to launch that content.
Yes.
Which is huge.
Huge.
And I think a lot of people, I don't know. I it's one of those things where until you do it, there's no practice run, you know?
No. Yeah.
You can't practice launching.
And I think that some people might have, like, this vision in their head where you just, like, make good content and you upload it to YouTube and stuff happens and magic things grow and everyone finds you somehow. But, like,
yes, that's not, you really
have to put a lot of thought into the launch. And the more work and thought and effort you put into the launch, the better things will go.
Yes.
So, as is a common theme with all of this, just put in more time and it's better.
So as you were saying, branding, I think, is a really great place to start. So in terms of branding, I mean, you don't have to have every single little aspect of your brand figured out. But I think you need a name for your channel. You need a logo. And I would say that you need channel art for your channel banner.
And I think that some of that goes back to letting your audience know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like think about that.
If you have a schedule, if you have a type of content you're making, the name, the logo, all of that. Like, when someone goes to your page, let's say that, like, I send you this link and I'm like, check out this channel. And you go there, the branding should tell you what type of channel it is, along with like the videos and the thumbnails and all of that stuff. But
yeah, so before you launch your channel out there into the world, you want to have that stuff set up, because people are way more likely to understand what your channel's about and click subscribe if you have a, you know, nice looking channel banner and a consistent logo. Mm-hmm. And I just think that stuff's very important, and it's going to stick with you.
Yeah, and if you start with one sort of branding and you try to change later, it can be really painful. We've known multiple people who have gone through difficult times, or at least trials and tribulations, because they tried to change their name and things went wrong.
Yeah. Along with that, like, I would say, once you have your name chosen, reserve all your social media handles.
On every single platform there is.
Even if you're like, I hate Twitter, I'm never going to tweet. Just get it anyway.
You might tweet. And then like let's say that you're like Yamaha 49 at
Are you just reading the yes, name
I,
on our
yes I am. Let's say that you're Yamaha man on on
love Yamaha.
And on your YouTube, but then like Yamaha man gets taken up on Twitter. That's unfortunate, you know?
That's unfortunate.
And then like, then when you're trying to give people your handles, you're like, then you follow me at Yamaha Man, like forever on Twitter, Yamaha Man 5
Yamaha Guy on Snapchat.
Yeah.
You want to like get it as consistent as you can across all your social media.
It's nice
channels.
That we can say like, follow us at Evan and Caitlin on Everywhere. Every single platform if you want to.
Exactly. Yeah. So, So that would definitely be an important part before launch. I think also, and this goes back to what we were saying when we were talking about going for a test run on Instagram. If you've started test running, putting out your content out there in little small doses on Instagram, engaging with that community and building up that community will help you have someone to launch to. And I think even if it's not huge, I think we had 500 subscribers or followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
When we launched our channel, it's still somebody. It's still 500 people that you didn't have otherwise to launch
it's
to.
It's somebody. You know, it's like, find that community. If you're Yamaha man, find your fellow audio enthusiasts, engage with them. And when you launch your Yamaha man channel, people will want to check out and see what you've been working on that you've been like teasing on your Instagram and stuff, you know?
And I think also tell people when you're going to launch, which... We did do that. I'm very glad we did, even though it was kind of stressful.
It was super stressful.
Because we had like an external deadline. But we told our friends and family, we announced it on our Instagram that we have a big announcement coming on this day. We told our friends at work. We told everybody. And so then we had to do it because we talked to so many people who, you know, we'll see them at events year after year. And they're like, well, I'm still going to start the channel. I just haven't yet. And it's like, if you set a date, then you have to do it. And then you'll do it. And it's, starting a channel is kind of like planting a tree.
Yeah.
Where it's like, the best time was years ago. The second best time is now.
It's so true.
But you don't want to keep putting it off and putting it off, because it's going to get harder and harder as you do.
One specific thing that we recommend to people we've talked to who are thinking about launching a channel, start with a batch of videos, because you only kind of get, it's like meeting someone for the first time. You only get one chance to make a first impression, you know? Mm-hmm. And let's say that you're Yamaha man and you want to do like reviews of audio equipment and like events that you go to around audio equipment and like other things. You want to show people your full breadth of what you're going to be doing. And it gives people multiple chances to like say, oh, that looks interesting. Because if you only have one video and someone goes to your channel, they're going to be making the decision whether to subscribe or not based on a single video as opposed to multiple chances.
And that single video will set their expectations.
Yes.
So if you want people to think you're only doing reviews of audio equipment because that's what you want to do, then you might want to have 4 different audio equipment reviews. But if you want people to think maybe you're just a channel that does tech reviews in general, maybe you have one that's audio thing, one that's a camera review, one that's a TV review, one that's a whatever review.
And that's such a stronger message than just a single video.
Yeah.
Like, actions speak louder than words or advertising, you know?
Yeah.
And videos speak louder than, I don't know, the analogy is breaking down, but you get the point.
Yeah. Yeah. So for our channel, we started with I think one or two home improvement videos, a concrete video, a woodworking video, probably one other thing. I don't remember exactly, but it was a mix of different maker videos because we wanted to send that message from the beginning that we would have a mix of things and give people more chances to subscribe.
Yeah.
And I think another thing, or two more reasons why it's good to have like a batch of videos. One is...
Oh, yeah. This is so important, actually. I think I know where you're going.
Which one am I going to say? I'm going to say both.
Refining your...
Oh, that's one. Okay, I'll start with that one. Right. So it might take you a couple tries to feel good about your editing and video style.
Yes.
So our first video, like we talked about earlier, where we added knobs to an IKEA dresser, I pretty much re-edited the entire thing after we recorded our second video. Because after the second one, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm getting the hang of this. The first one's terrible.
And we even went back and refilmed like intro or scenes or transitions. Yeah. We redid voiceovers. And we had that opportunity to like get to version two.
Yeah, because we didn't just publish that one video and then move on.
And once it's up on YouTube, it's up.
It's there. I mean, you could delete it. But again, like you don't want to announce your channel and have that one first impression and then like delete it and announce it again.
Yeah.
So I think it does help you to figure out your style. If you're doing a few videos, it like builds in like a grace period to edit them. But I think another thing is, so when we launched our channel, we didn't want people to just find our one video, see that that's the only video we had and think like, oh, I just saw you were making a really weird face. You're trying to distract me. And we don't want people to see our one video and think that we were just a one-off. And that we just uploaded this one video and whatever. We felt like if we had multiple videos, people would see them and think, oh, okay, these people are uploading continually and consistently. And this is a thing they are doing. It's not just some couple randomly uploaded a video.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. All right, guys, now, guess what time it is?
I don't know. I don't know. Do you want to answer?
Yeah, it's how to grow.
Oh.
What everyone came here for, how to grow. We've just been, like, talking for all this time about all this background stuff, but, like...
The background stuff's important.
It's the most important, but this is what you've come for, how to grow.
How to grow. How to grow your YouTube channel.
This is the most difficult part of everyone's careers. Like, growing from zero... So many people have said that this is the most painful part of the process. Like when you're at zero, the first 100 is the hardest. The first 1,000 is the hardest. Then the next 10,000 is the hardest. But like once you get going, it kind of...
The momentum builds upon itself.
I'm not going to say it really gets easier, but it gets more rewarding.
The growth aspect of it like builds upon itself.
Yeah,
you don't have to work as hard for every single view.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you find a product on Amazon, you know, and it has zero reviews, you're like, should I get this? But like the more like watches you get, the more subs you get, it's kind of like the community buying in and endorsing you in a way.
Yeah, like if you see a video pop up on your homepage and it's like
this changes everything and it has zero views,
or this changes everything
and it has 5 million views. You're like, what does this change?
Exactly. Exactly.
What changed?
And I think the biggest thing is people aren't just going to find you.
Yeah. Especially when you're at zero, you know,
especially when you're at zero, there's so many new channels, so many new videos uploaded every single day. And when you start, you're just one of those. And so, you really have to work to bring people to your channel. When we first started, 80% of our views were from outside of YouTube. So that means places where our video was embedded outside of YouTube. And all of that was done by us. We were sharing it on Instructables. We were sharing it on Reddit. We were putting it on our blog.
And this kind of goes back to like what type of content you make. Mm-hmm. Finding those communities, knowing where that content is shared, how it's shared, the kind of like etiquette around all of that, like... Promote it, but promote it like where it makes the most sense for your videos and your community. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So as a maker channel, Instructables made a lot of sense for us.
Yes.
But it might be different for you if you're a travel channel or a cooking channel.
Or an auto body shop channel. Yeah. Who knows? You know, but like one thing that I think a lot of people might overlook is just... Share it with your social circles. Share it with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Ask them to share it around. Like that that might be enough to like start things moving.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like, what is the joke where it's like I two guys are running away from a bear. Yes. And he's like, I don't need to run faster than the bear. I just need to run faster than you.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that in the beginning. It's like, you don't have to instantly go viral. You just have to have more views than other people who are starting at zero, you know, to start like building up your momentum. So whereas right now us telling like our friends to share it on social media, to share a video on social media, might not make a huge difference, but in the beginning it does make a huge difference compared to your size.
Yeah. And again, like, I hate to say this, but like, I'm not sure if we have said it yet. You have to have good content. I mean,
well, yeah,
that's a whole nother thing. I mean, we had a section in this whole talk about like how to make your content good. It has to stand out in some way. It has to like do whatever, but like all of this is kind of with the caveat that kind of has to be good.
I think if you implement some of the tips we talked about earlier with like pacing and yeah. filming tips and having a story
or adding value or serving a niche that's underserved or what have you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like it also has to be good.
I don't know. To be good. let's just have that as like an underlying understanding.
An understanding. Yeah.
The reason everyone just says like, well, it just has to be good content and no one really goes into it is because it's very subjective and it's very hard.
And
put your finger on every single part of it that makes it
there good. Also aren't any, like, all of the things we've talked about so far, they're all like general best practices that you mm-hmm. can be applied to all sorts of different content types and all sorts of different videos. But like what makes content good depends so much on everything. It's not even something I can say like all entertainment videos should blank.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. So sorry. I kind of went on a little tangent there. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yes. Okay. But so back to sharing your stuff. So like I said, 80% of our views came from us pushing it outside of YouTube. But our theory is that the other 20% we got from YouTube was only because we had a little traction with that, the views we were getting outside of it. You know?
I feel like that's kind of true. Like, especially because we were doing like at that point, kind of slightly more niche, slightly more educational content than we're doing now. And we were trying to rely on search too. Now, when you search and you see a video with zero views, you probably never see a video with zero views because YouTube just won't even serve it up. But like you have to have some views to start showing up in search and start trending for different types of topics and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is another theory. It's just a theory. No one at YouTube has confirmed this, but I think that how YouTube knows what video you made is by using the data of who watches your content. Mm-hmm. So like
more than like your tags and stuff.
Yeah. More than your tags. Your tags are maybe like a starting place, but they're endorsed by the people who visit your video. Like let's say I do a woodworking video and everyone who comes and watches and stays engaged through the whole thing, maybe leaves a like, maybe leaves a comment. They also like woodworking videos in general. That's going to be an endorsement by your viewers that your content is woodworking.
Yeah.
Well, where is that going?
I don't know.
Okay. The 80% of views that we were driving drove the additional 20% because those 80% brought in viewers, brought in data, gave Google the information they needed to make properly a judgment about our video, and then they could start serving it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So we've talked about this a little bit, but community involvement is very important for promoting your video. So not just like when you launch it, but also to keep reminding people of your channel. Every time you update or upload a new video, you can post about it on your various social channels. And, but not only that, I think being just a present and involved person in the community mm-hmm. helps. You know, people will see your username over and over again if you're being interactive in your community, and that's a reminder every time. And then if they see a YouTube video pop up and they're like, oh, that's that person that I keep seeing in all the comments and all the people I follow, they're more likely to click it than if they have no idea who you are.
And of course, never be pushy, never sub for sub, never. One like equals two subscribes or whatever. No. Like don't
do any of that. Be helpful.
Helpful, positive, or like, you know, whatever, like contribute, provide value. And that's going to be the way to get positive attention as opposed to fickle attention.
Yes.
Or just being blocked.
Yeah, that too. I think another thing is like, and this probably depends on the types of videos you're making, but a lot of communities will have things like challenges you can participate in. So like one of the first things we did, there's a maker podcast called The Modern Maker Podcast, and they had a 2x4 challenge, and a lot of people entered and submitted videos. And participating in that, it definitely gave us a boost and introduced us to a lot more people. And that video became our most watched video for a while, you know, until we continued to like keep growing and move and keep going. But I think that's a really great way to get extra eyeballs, but also just continue to form relationships in the community, because you'll start to like get to know and you'll start to follow the other people participating, and like it can just lead to genuine relationships.
And speaking of those genuine relationships, one way to really establish those even more is to go to events. That's one thing we really enjoy doing in general. And I think that like
we just talked about events like a lot in our last podcast. So if you want like more thoughts on that, we'll link to it. But
yeah, but in general, it's good to get involved, like maybe volunteer, maybe like, you know, meet up with some of those people you interacted with in that last challenge, you know, have meals with people, and that can strengthen those bonds in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So another way to grow is collaborations. And we get asked about collaborations a lot, because we've actually done probably more than most people who, considering like the young age of our channel.
Yeah, we've done a lot.
We've done a lot of collaborations as well. We're weird. Last year we did a lot.
Maybe a little bit too much.
And so we get asked about it a lot. And I think my biggest tip with collaborations is it's not a guaranteed thing that all of a sudden your channel is just going to grow like crazy. It might happen. You might not grow at all. And so I think only do a collaboration if you just want to do it because you are friends with this person and it's going to be fun. And if you guys both grow, awesome. And if you don't, that's cool. You still had a week of hanging out with, you know, with a friend that you wouldn't have been hanging out with otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that one of the biggest values we've gotten from collaborations in general is just learning skills, like watching other people work, not like just working with, like, you know, making, because we're involved with a lot of makers and stuff. But
like the back end business side of things.
Yeah, it's so like crazy.
How much people film, seeing someone film and then seeing the final product of their edited video is very eye-opening. Or seeing, or you know, having a chance to talk to somebody about sponsors, or having the chance to talk to someone about how they keep track of projects and all that stuff. You know, it can happen at events too, but when you're doing a collaboration, there's a lot more one-on-one time together, and so you can go much deeper into it. But I think people think that it's just like this magic thing, and therefore they propose a collaboration and it comes off like it's only for the purpose of growing. So I think if you do want to collaborate with someone, you need to make sure that you and that other person have an actual real relationship first, you know?
And like also maybe if you're smaller than the channel you want to collaborate with,
bring add some to value. The table.
Yeah, yeah. Like reduce their workload or help out in some way, or
do something that, you know, provide something that they might not have been able to do on their own. Like if you're an expert in something, then you can bring that to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So in terms of the technical stuff, like the back end,
keep going. You're doing great. The analytics.
The analytics. Words are so hard. We're just going to kind of not breeze over them a little bit, because I think that there are videos that touch on this deeper and better. Mm-hmm. Do your research. I know that's kind of like a little bit of a cop-out, but we'll touch on a few little things here and there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that one of the things is use a lot of the systems that are in place. Like YouTube puts these systems in place, and if you're not taking advantage of them, then you're leaving things on the table. I think one of the things that we've started doing now that I think is really important is putting time into your closed captions, especially now that YouTube starts auto-playing videos on the homepage, and what shows up in the video are closed captions.
Yeah. Also, closed captions are one of the things that YouTube indexes when they're trying to like figure out what type of video you have. So of course there's things like keywords, but captions are another opportunity. Also, auto closed captions are not always the best. Like,
they think that we are vulgar people.
Yes, they think we curse like sailors, and we do not curse in our videos. But that could, if auto captions are picking up cursing in your videos and you don't go in and manually correct it, it might, YouTube might think that your channel isn't appropriate for all audiences.
Yeah.
So it might not show you to everybody. So that's definitely one one kind of back end thing to to tackle.
Another thing that you can do is, especially like in the beginning, if you're relying on like search to bring in viewers and stuff.
Especially if you're an educational channel or you're doing something that maybe is trending right now that a lot of people are searching for.
Yeah. Do your research on like keywords. Like, what if DIY bookends is better than like wooden bookends, or that's not the best example.
But yeah, but that like one thing we learned, again, you know, we started as a DIY channel. We learned that often how to has a lot more search than DIY, which I would not have expected. And but it might also not be the same right now. It changes, but it's just one of those things to look into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think also things like, make sure you have a channel trailer.
Yeah.
You may not need it immediately when you first launch your channel, because oftentimes you need footage from other videos to incorporate into a channel trailer. Not always, but I think it helps. But as soon as you feel comfortable doing that, I think that's another good thing to,
yeah,
to add to your channel.
And I think have playlists too. Like, if on your homepage, all it is that single default bar of videos.
It looks very empty.
It looks very empty. And you might have 100 videos, but when someone goes to your homepage, they only see 5 or 4 or whatever it is. Well, and if you have like playlists with like descriptions in the playlist, which are also searchable, by the way. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, fill it out, flush things out.
Also with playlist, because a good thing about playlist is you are controlling what that person is going to see next if they just let things autoplay. So instead of watching your video and then seeing a bunch of other people's videos, they're more likely to stay watching your video if they're watching from a playlist.
So playlists are great to put in like the end cards of your videos. Then it'll get people on like a track of videos instead of one, or like in the links and description or wherever you're putting links in general. Playlists are better than a single video.
Yes.
Yes. And I think that everyone knows this, but like on the technical side, the thumbnail is so dang important.
It's more important than any of the other like back-end YouTube stuff we've mentioned in this section.
Yeah, I know that we kind of get sucked down the rabbit hole of like trying to find the perfect thumbnail.
Oh, it takes hours sometimes. I put on makeup today just so that we could take pictures for a thumbnail.
Not for this podcast audience?
No. You know I don't wear makeup on the podcast.
Yeah, so it's really important, and like it also conveys so much about your video, or at least people like assume it does. You know?
So for example, one thing that we have been figuring out, again, because we transitioned from more instructional to more entertainment, is most instructional DIY channels, the photo or the thumbnail is going to be a photo of the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
That sends a message to the person clicking, like, here is what you're clicking for. If you want to learn how to make this, here is the thing. And when we started doing, or when we started shifting more towards entertainment, and we always had a little bit of entertainment in there, but the more and more we shift, the more we started realizing that that doesn't necessarily work. Like, people don't want to see how it turns out in the very beginning.
Because it's not as good of a story. It's like, it's like a spoiler.
Because they're there for the journey. They're not there for the finished product.
Yes.
You know, but if you're giving instructions, people don't want to invest time in the video unless they know what they're watching for. So I think just know that, like get into the mindset of the audience you want to reach with your videos, and don't just apply a default rule that you think is right because other people who make similar videos are doing it.
And you can always, like, again, going back to the social platforms, you can always do polls. You can always do,
ask
your friends and family. And also, like, knowing what type of content you're making, going all the way back to the very beginning, do your research, look at other channels that are doing well in your same type of field, and look at, like, how they structure their thumbnails and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example, like, if you're doing entertainment-based videos, it's, you know, it can be important to have a face in your thumbnail because reactions are more important than the thing you're reacting to.
Now, keep in mind, there also has to be like a strong cohesiveness between the thumbnail, the title, and the content.
That kind of goes back to the consistency and expectations.
Yeah, but also it's like on the analytical and technical side of things, if you have like this crazy thumbnail and a crazy title, you're like, most extreme wipeouts ever. And it's like a kid falling over in their cart or something like that, you know. Actually, that might be pretty good.
Maybe it's a whiteboard and you wipe it off. It's an extreme wipeout.
Those are two actually really good ideas. Dang it. But like, you know, like if someone clicks in and they immediately click out, what signal does that send to YouTube?
That tells YouTube that your thumbnail and title were misleading.
Yeah, and if someone searches for most extreme wipeouts, they see your title and thumbnail, they click it, they go in and they go right back out. Guess where your video is going next?
Not there.
Yeah, it won't be in the search for much longer. You know what I mean? So there has to be that cohesiveness, because in the end, YouTube is trying to like deliver high quality content that's sticky, that delivers, and that's accurate. And you don't want to send false messages.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So another thing to keep in mind is scheduling. And there's a lot of different opinions on this. So we'll just share what we found works for us and why. We like to have a little bit of a schedule. And by a little bit, I mean a lot of bit
of a schedule. It helps drive things. It helps keep us on schedule. It helps standardize things.
Our schedule keeps us on schedule.
Yes. but also, like, it adds an end point. Because I think, especially with this one right here, if we didn't have a schedule, should just want to keep on refining it forever. And it would be hard to ever call it done.
It's true. That's very true. But yeah, I think there's, like, and again, it probably depends on your personality, but for us, there are good internal reasons to have a schedule, but I feel like there's also good external reasons. So the internal, like you said, it keeps us from putting too much time into one video. It also keeps us from taking breaks, which maybe we need more breaks. But we can produce a lot more because we know every Friday there's got to be a video out.
But also you can schedule in breaks.
But I think externally it helps make your videos more of a habit for people watching. Because if, you know, in the same way, like, you know, when The Office came on Thursday nights, I knew Thursday nights I was going to watch The Office. If Evan and Caitlin, you know, release a video Fridays, like Friday mornings, then I know that's what I'm doing Friday morning.
Yeah, or even if it's Saturday morning or Sunday morning, you can build the transitions around whatever time it is. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is. I'm just saying, like, you pick your day.
Yeah, and then, you know, whatever day that is, you go and watch that content, and then you're not as reliant on the subscriber bell and the notifications and all of the systems that YouTube has in place that sometimes, you know, might change. But if you know every weekend I watch this, this, and this, you know, then
you'll seek it out even if YouTube isn't sending you a notification.
Whereas, like, if you're publishing like once a month or once every 2 months, you might like not know that someone has published a piece of content and you won't go search it out.
Or maybe they publish once a month for a couple months and then they publish five in a week.
Yeah.
You know, you might not catch all those five because you're only expecting one a month.
Yeah. And you know, one a month still has a good... It's not a bad approach necessarily.
No, I don't think it's a bad approach to do one a month. Mark Rober does one a month. I just think he's doing one a month consistently.
Yeah, and he's not all of a sudden like jumping up to multiple. Yeah, you're right.
Or skipping tons of months in between.
Yeah, but like being consistent in general.
And that's not to say you can't take breaks. We take buffer weeks sometimes where we like continue to work. We still do podcasts and gaming videos, but we don't do our main channel videos so that we can get ahead. And so don't feel like the schedule has to
rule your life.
Rule your life, but I think it does help add a little structure.
And I think it's really hard to do that at the beginning, especially if you're not seeing the growth that you want. You know, it feels like your content's going into a black hole. But I think that like it's pretty important then to kind of like think of yourself as like a full-time content creator and like put in that work and effort. Because if you don't, then you probably won't see that growth.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the hard things because you might only be getting a few views on a video that took X amount of hours to make. Mm. And a year from now, your videos might take the same amount of hours to make, but you get thousands of views.
Yeah.
But in that first period, you're doing the same amount of work for nothing or for what feels like nothing. And so it's easy to get demotivated. And to not want to put on the time, to not want to, you know, put out as many videos as you can.
Yeah, but like going back to that drywall video that we talked about earlier, that was the very, like in the first batch of four videos, it was in that batch. And that for the longest time was our number one by far watched video. And it's still in the top five, right?
Top five to like 5 to 7 or so.
5 to 7, yeah. Yeah. It's still way going. Up there. It's still going.
And it was the second video we filmed and edited. And it was in that initial batch when we had no subscribers and no views
and no money coming from it, but it's been monetized since, and it's like slowly bringing in that residual money, you know.
So I think, like, just think of those things, think of the potential of your videos even when people aren't seeing them initially.
Yeah, and after covering all of that, I think we're gonna like go back around to dealing with change. It's something that we've dealt with some, and it was a little bit painful. Like at the end of 2018, we started experimenting with some different types of videos because that's what we knew we wanted long term. We knew that would make us happy long term, and we didn't exactly know how to mesh the type of content or make that transition. And we dealt with it by just like grinding on through it, dealing with the slightly less performing videos, learning those lessons, and eventually we emerged out the other side, and everything has been so much better since we kind of successfully made that transition. And
we have podcasts where we talk about the transition a lot more.
Yeah.
I'll link them below.
Yeah. But like, it's something to keep in mind. And also maybe people who are watching this have a channel that they've been going at for a while and
maybe they want to change.
I don't know how much there is to say about it just because we went through it and it's going to be unique for every single channel and stuff. But I think that knowing it's a possibility, knowing it does cost something, but in the long term, if you're making the change for yourself and for those right reasons, it's worth it. All right, I think that brings us to monetization. Okay, so before we go into like monetization and how to monetize your videos, I just want to share like a little bit of a back end on how we transitioned from full-time and part-time to, well, our old jobs to our new jobs, and like how we did that. Because most people who are going to be doing YouTube as a career, they generally also have to like think about how they're going to make that transition financially. And I think some of the tips that we have developed and we've thought about will help you make that transition less painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I used to work as an engineer. We talked about it more in a previous episode. It seems like it's a theme. Like this is like,
we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
We have. And you know, when I was working as an engineer, we knew we wanted to make this transition, so I kind of went to consulting to kind of supplement that income and make the transition less painful.
Well, you switched from full-time to consulting.
Yes.
Yeah, there was no income from YouTube.
Yeah, there was no income at the beginning.
And so you weren't supplementing any income, which was the income.
Supplementing our income of $0.
Of $0. But the reason that you went to consulting is because then you had a little bit more control over your schedule.
Yeah, and I got paid more per hour. And the main thing we're trying to do is cut down the hours of our old jobs and increase the hours of YouTube. So that was like one option that was open to me.
Yeah, and I was a graphic designer, and I switched from working 40 hours a week to working 30 hours a week to working 20 hours a week to being talked to by my team saying, hey, you either need to come back to full time or you need to quit so we can hire someone else. And I was like, well, I'm quitting. So it's that between you reducing your hours on a consulting basis from going like 5 days a week to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1 and me reducing my hours per week, we were able to gear up the channel and still maintain some income. Now, it was still kind of scary because, you know, we at a certain point didn't have health insurance anymore and had to figure that out.
And we just had to bite the bullet and pay for it.
Yeah. And, you know, you do, even though there's part of you that's like, well, I can always go back to another job and to our old jobs or a similar job. And we did feel that way. It's just still a little scary, but I think being able to ease into that transition made it a lot less scary than just both of us quitting our jobs on the same day and going from full-time jobs to no income.
Yeah.
You know?
And another reason why we want to share this story is because for both of us, this was very unconventional at our companies. No one at Caitlin's company was doing what she was doing. No one at my company was doing what I was doing. But we made it happen because it was a priority for us. Mm-hmm. And in the end, even though reducing our hours at our jobs was scary, the thing that scared us honestly more was looking into the future and knowing that we didn't do everything that we could to make this, like, give it the best shot possible. That was scarier to us than the transition.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, and like you said, this wasn't a conventional path. So I guess the advice there is don't be afraid to ask for something, even if other people aren't doing it. The worst that someone can say is no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how we transitioned from full-time to part-time to YouTube. Or, old, yeah, like you said, old jobs to YouTube. But we still had to figure out how to make YouTube actually make money. Because, like, growth, there's a whole bunch of strategies on growth, but there's also separate strategies in terms of how to actually make money from your growth, especially if you're not relying on AdSense alone.
Yeah. And I think that, like, the two big tips that we have are, early on, diversify, and start with baby steps earlier on than you might think. Because
we started monetizing really early.
Yeah, like at 30,000 subscribers.
Yeah, we had our first sponsor at 30,000 subscribers.
And the reason why you do that early is because things might not go smoothly. And honestly, it's better to learn that when you're smaller than when you're a lot bigger. You know, like the bigger you are, the bigger you fall type analogy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's more at risk.
There's more at risk, basically.
When you're bigger. Yeah. I think that's one reason. I think another reason is if implementing that type of monetization is a goal of yours, the earlier you start building that portfolio, the easier it is to continue to build.
Yeah, on both sides, on the advertiser side and from your viewers, because if you've grown a whole bunch and your viewers are used to no sponsorships and everything like that, and you start throwing them in, then that's a change, you know, and it's maybe an unwelcome one. But if you know, people know from the beginning that that's how you've been able to make videos and how you're able to make more videos or better quality videos or what have you, then, and that's part of your identity, then it won't be as big of a negative in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it's interesting. We got a comment today on one of our videos, and I could tell it was someone new to the channel because they said, man, these guys aren't even 400,000 subscribers and they already have sponsors. And I was like, well, it's actually very common in the maker community, but it's like we started so early on that for our regular viewers, it's like not even a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just this is just how we pay our bills.
Yeah.
You know?
And also it's like the earlier you start working with these companies, the easier it will be for you to understand the contracts, how to negotiate, how to reach out. And also the more brand deals you do and advertising that you do, it's like kind of a portfolio, because the more you put advertisements into your videos, the more you can show off how you do that in a way that, you know, hopefully creates a win-win-win all the way around for the advertiser. They are being shown to the right community. The community is being shown something in a fun way or being exposed to a new product. And for you, you're like naturally tying these two people together. Mm-hmm. And hopefully everything works out hunky-dory and happy-happy.
And I want to clarify two things real quick. One, when you say advertiser, you're talking about sponsors.
Sponsors, yeah.
So that's like brands that we're working directly with, not advertisers that are advertising on YouTube.
Yes.
Another thing, we need to backtrack a lot because we just started going down the sponsor rabbit hole. Point one was diversify. So I feel like we could talk a little bit about like the different ways that we make money.
Yeah. Okay. Let's break it down.
And then we can go deeper into them each.
In each one. Okay. Yeah. So let's break it down like top level. Where do we personally, like collectively make money for Evan and Caitlin? So 60% are from sponsors.
Yes.
15% Patreon.
15.
What did I say?
Oh, you said 15, but it just, sometimes it's hard to tell if someone's saying 50 or 15.
Okay. 60% from sponsors, 15% from Patreon, 15 from AdSense, 6 from affiliate, and 4 from merch.
Yes.
So that's the breakdown for us. And, you know, I think that's actually all of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's like little things like we get like a tiny amount from
plan
Twitch.
Sales or
a
Twitch.
Tiny amount from plan sales. And everyone is going to do it differently and you might change. Like in the beginning, we also sold products.
Yeah.
Like physical things that we made.
So, and I think that a huge part of like our like community in general are selling plans. Like some people, that's like their entire income, you know?
Yeah. And for us, we have like a couple plans.
Or you can sell books or online classes, or like you can have a really successful website where you sell space on there. Or
you do a lot of public speaking you get paid to do talks.
Yeah.
But I think like testing all of these again, and if you test it a little bit when you're smaller, it's a little bit easier because the risks are lower.
You do have to like learn the ins and outs of each one again and again and again.
As you get bigger?
No. Like, so it's like, let's say you figure out sponsors and you're like, yay, I figured that out. Then you also had to figure out affiliate and you also had to figure out merch. But I think
it's just an investment of your time.
It is worth it. It's worth it to like put the time in and figure that out.
And you may test something out. Like you may try Patreon and say, this is not for me. I don't feel comfortable with the amount of value that I'm providing to these people that are paying me money and I want to pull out. Or you might be like us and be like, I freaking love Patreon. Our patrons are so awesome.
Well, before we dive into each individual one,
I was just using Patreon as an example of things that you like you might try something and not like it, or you might try something and love it. So it's worth it to try lots of things.
Well, actually, I was about to say, before we dive into something, let's actually dive into each one individually.
Okay.
So let's start with sponsors, because I feel like that's kind of pretty complicated and it's a big one for a lot of people, including us.
It's probably the one we get asked about most. Yeah, probably because sponsors can allow you to go full time with your channel long before you'd be able to otherwise.
Any other way.
Like if we didn't have any sponsors, we might just now be able to go full time.
Yeah, and that's so crazy. No, I think you're right. If we hadn't have gone down the sponsor route early on, we would be going full time now. And instead of making 120 videos in our career so far, we would have made less.
Yeah.
A lot less.
A lot less. So I think one of the hardest things is like, how do you connect with sponsors? How do you reach out to them?
You reach out to them. Like,
sorry. Well, yes, so it's like, that's like, what I was going to say.
But like, we are definitely strong advocates for like taking the first step in that relationship. I know a lot of people say like, no, wait for them to come to you because you get more bargaining power. And there might be some small truth in that. But at the same time, like choosing who you want to work with is so important to us, because being able to give a genuine endorsement of a company or a product makes things so much easier and feel good. It's like, I love so many of the sponsors we work with, and it feels nice to be able to give them like I don't know.
Yeah. Well, also, I think like kind of like what we were saying in the beginning, when you don't have any track record with sponsors, they're probably not going to reach out to you. You might get reached out for someone wanting to send you a free product, but it can be hard to convince somebody to pay you when you don't have a track record yet. So you can start working with them earlier on if you reach out, as opposed to just waiting for them to find you.
Yeah. And honestly, like it does take time. There is a cost to it, but at the same time, who knows when that brand will just somehow find you, you know? It's like going to a bar and like looking cute in a corner or something and like hoping someone just like, I don't know. I'm not sure if that way makes the most sense, but just like,
hoping that someone comes over and tells you you're cute.
Yeah. is that what you do?
Going up. It's been a long time since either of us have been single.
It's been a long time.
I would have thought that you were cute in the corner. Oh,
thank you. I would have thought that you're very cute too, but I probably wouldn't have gone up and approached you because I'm shy.
I think you can start working with sponsors earlier if you reach out. And of course, the earlier you reach out, the less you're going to get paid, because you're not pulling in as many views. But we were okay with that in order to like get practice.
Yeah.
And start like forming relationships.
I think that in terms of reaching out, it really helps to engage with a brand a little bit before you just send them a message out of the blue, you know, like tag them on social media, comment on their things, like, because the person who decides the social media campaigns is probably going to be tied somehow in with the social media like accounts and everything like that. So, you know, get engaged with the brands, especially like when you're first starting out and everything, and then maybe send them a DM, send them a message, like look up their contact information via like press releases or what have you, you know, like be proactive about things, but also don't be pushy and weird.
don't be pushing weird, but I'm going to, you kind of breezed over this, how we reach out to them.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
where we reach out to them. Part yeah. is DMs, but a big one is like press releases, because a lot of times there's an email on the press release and that's someone who is on the marketing team for the company.
Yeah.
You can also do some light stalking on LinkedIn.
Or if you're going to events again, you're not only meeting people, you might meet some brands companies. That you're really excited about. And you're like, hey, I love your product. I'd love to do something with you. Let's form a relationship, mm-hmm. you know, and be really positive. And I think that one thing that you want to do is like, think about things from the brand's perspective. They're probably being approached all the time and you want to stand out and you want to make things an easy yes. You know, like tell a story like, hey, I've been using your products for 8 years and I love them and I'd love to share the story. And I have this project that'll show off your product really well and make it so that they can say yes.
Yeah. As so
instead of lots of back and forths, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to say, you don't just want to email and say, hey, would you like to work with me? You know, like you want to give them reasons to say yes and feels like you actually put effort into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think another side of the coin with sponsors that a lot of people have trouble with is figuring out how much to charge, because you want to be fair to the company, but mm-hmm. you also don't want to get completely ripped off, mm-hmm. you know? So yes. it's the way we go about it is kind of fairly standard practice in the industry, mm-hmm. but you kind of go by a cost per 1,000 views. It's called a CPM, cost per mil.
Cost per mil.
Cost per mil.
Yeah, and it's the cost per 1,000 views in the first 30 days yeah, of a video's yeah. life. And the views of the last 10 or so average performing videos.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have like a calculator for ourselves. Yep. But so you just have to figure out what that CPM is for you, and then it makes pricing yourself really easy. And CPMs won't necessarily be consistent between bigger and smaller channels, because the bigger someone is, it might be hard to charge the same CPM when you are getting millions of views as it was when you were getting hundreds of views, because it doesn't scale. Like you can outprice yourself.
Yeah.
So
and it also depends on the industry. Like gaming might have totally. A different CPM than DIY, that, you know, fashion and, you know, lifestyle, yeah, etc.
Booty community
probably has a pretty high CPM.
Probably has pretty high CPM. But yeah, so talk to people who are around your same size, because that's going to be a better measure of what you should be charging rather than talking to someone who's 10 times your size.
And it also depends on the type of advertisement. Is it product placement? Is it full talking points? Are the talking points at the very beginning, or are they at the end, or are they in the middle? How long are they? Are you going to have to be exclusive with the brand? You might need to build in some CPM for that. All these things play into it.
It sounds very overwhelming listing all of the factors.
But that's why you start yeah. early. You start early. You get that experience. You figure out what is costly to you and what isn't costly.
It's very stressful when it's like the difference of thousands of dollars on the line, because you realize you should have charged more if you had to say the ad up front rather than the ad at the end.
But in the beginning, it's going to be a difference.
In the beginning, if it's a
50 or hundreds,
maybe. If it's like $50 difference, then you're kind of like, oh, well, you know.
No, big loss for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly. In general, just to give you a general range to start at, maybe between 15 and 50 CPM.
Yeah.
So you take that 15 or 50, you multiply it by the average views in the first 30 days of your past 10 videos. Yeah. And then that's how you get your price.
Yeah. So for us, like product placements are on the lower end, and sponsorships with talking points, you know, 60-second talking points are on the higher end.
Yeah.
And you just kind of like figure out what works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's go over to Patreon, because we love Patreon.
We do love Patreon.
And this is something that we started fairly early on too. And you know what? From the beginning, we were invested in it. We had a vision for it. We wanted to build up a community there. And we put in as much effort from the beginning compared to now. What a words? Can you say that again?
we put the same amount of effort in the beginning as we do now, even though there are a lot less people. And it's kind of, that's kind of consistent with the videos. Mm-hmm. You put in effort as if this is your full-time 100% thing from the very beginning, even when you're not really getting much out of it, because you want to like establish yourself in a good place from the beginning. And you know, let's say what you do for your patrons, you know, one thing we do is we record an after show after every video. It takes us the same amount of time to record that after show if there's two patrons or 200 patrons. So you just have to be okay with that in the beginning if that's the kind of thing you want to pursue.
And it's also a lot easier to see the value when you're small and when you're beginning, because when you aren't getting that much money from anything, Patreon, you know, is a really great option. But as soon as you're like really, really big, starting over from zero on a new platform, it's kind of a lot harder.
Yeah, because it's harder to justify the time you're putting into this new thing when you already know how to make a lot of money on these other things.
And one huge advantage of Patreon as opposed to like sponsors or AdSense or anything else is Patreon is very consistent.
It's super consistent.
It feels so nice knowing that our patrons are there supporting us.
It's like a safety net.
It's a safety net, yeah.
And I think there's a couple different ways you can go about Patreon. So we talked to a lot of different people about how they do it, and I've kind of narrowed it down to three different ways. It can just kind of be a donation box where you say, hey, I have this Patreon. If you want to donate to me to help support the channel, this is where you go. There's not necessarily any rewards. It's just a donation box.
Yeah, so it's like lower effort, but also lower payback.
Lower effort, lower payback. Then there's the type of Patreon that offers one-time rewards. So that's like if you sign up to become a patron, you get a t-shirt or you get a sticker or things like that that you have to, as the content creator, you have to deliver those rewards once per patron. But then never again. I think the benefits of those are there's not as much maintenance per patron, but you do have to keep it. Does like your effort has to scale with the amount of patrons. So maybe it's not a big deal to send shirts if you're only getting a few new patrons a month, but if you're getting like a few every day, that could be a lot of work.
It could be, yeah.
The other way is offering ongoing rewards that are not divvied out on an individual basis. They are like given as a group. So that's kind of what we do.
Because it scales well.
It scales well. And it is a lot more work, especially in the beginning, again, when you don't have that many people. But we do things like after show videos. We do behind the scenes posts. We do monthly video chat calls with our top patrons. And these are things that I feel very comfortable in our ability to scale. Mm-hmm. And that works well with us. And a bonus is I feel like we have like a good relationship with our patrons.
Yep. I think that ties up Patreon. I think that going over to AdSense, I'm not sure if there's much we can really share. I mean, most people seem to understand this. You get more views, you get more money. And depending on like the type of channel you run, you might get slightly higher CPM or slightly lower CPM.
That's what's interesting is that people's CPM varies. It's not just like a standard CPM across the board YouTubers. No.
So it's like, the type of content you make and also the time of the year. You know, in December, it's higher when more companies are spending money. And in January, before their budgets are approved and everything,
it's lower.
It's a lot lower.
That's why lots of YouTubers take vacations in January.
Yeah, a little side bonus knowledge there. But like, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's not going to be as much of an issue if you have family-friendly content. From what we've gathered, I mean, YouTube doesn't like publish a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of speculation, but.
So I think we can go into affiliate a little bit more, because really affiliate is a perfect type of income source for channels like us, where we're buying things, showing how they're used, and making things with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like basically affiliate like income works by you put a link in your description or in your wherever you put links, and every time it's like a referral, you know, it's like someone clicks it, they buy it, and you get like a small percentage back from the seller.
Yeah. So like we use Amazon affiliates a lot.
It's really easy to start with.
Yeah. It's super easy to apply. And it's very easy to get the links you need.
Yeah. Now one tip we did get from someone who started a channel and they started doing affiliate like very early. If you start an affiliate account with Amazon and you don't sell enough right away,
you might have to reapply.
You might need to reapply later. But it wasn't
something we had issues with. I mean, it might be different because we were a maker channel.
It might be different because we were a maker
channel. People were more likely to click on our affiliate links because we were saying, here's the thing we made. Here's the tools and materials we used to make it.
Yeah.
This is more incentive to click.
Or
it might depend on your channel.
Yeah, or you can list the camera you use or your gear or whatever it is. So you can kind of tailor it to your own channel a little bit. Mm-hmm. But
If you're like, a travel vlog, it could be like your backpack and your water bottle.
But it's such an easy win-win-win for everybody because the people watching want to know what you use, mm-hmm. you provide it, the company gets the sale, and you get some income. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. There you go. Right.
So merch. Let's go on to merch. So I think there's two types of merch fulfillment in general. Print on demand or carrying stock yourself.
Yeah, we opt for print on demand. We started carrying our own stock and it's surprisingly difficult to estimate what you're gonna need even when you only have one design.
I'm laughing because like we got it so far off. We didn't know like how many men's to order, how many women's, what sizes.
And those were the only variabilities. Yeah. It was one. Yeah.
We only had one design, and we got it wrong.
Yeah,
very wrong.
So what that told us is that print on demand is a lot easier, and also when you're, you know, it can totally be cheaper to order your own stock, but it's only cheaper if you can guess it right and order a lot of it at once. At the smaller quantities we were ordering, it wasn't necessarily a better deal than us just doing it print on demand.
Yeah.
Because we were getting not huge batches.
You also have to like factor in the cost of your own time. Like, should you be fulfilling merch or should you be making more videos? And like the disruption of like shipping out a single shirt in a day.
Yeah.
It might be more than you think.
It's we really didn't like shipping stuff.
we don't. Shipping is like so much more of a pain and more expensive than you might think at all.
You got to get the package.
Well, Amazon completely spoils everybody because like Amazon, it's just free. It's like 2 day and like people expect that and it's not that.
But I guess like print on demand, it's very easy. There's no limit on the amount of designs you can do. Whereas if you're carrying your own stock, every design you add adds another variable you have to guess about. Mm. So it's what works best for us. We use Printful. We'll put a link to them in the description. It'll probably be an affiliate link.
It will.
Most of our links will be affiliate links as it is listed. We always say they're affiliate. But yeah, I think that's like kind of the basics of merch.
Yeah.
Again, we're getting into things that for most people, it will be a smaller portion of your income. Not everybody. We know some people who the majority of their income comes from merch.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you're getting started, merch will be not a huge part and probably not something you need to deal with immediately.
Yeah. And I think that those topics probably cover all of the like most widely applicable ways of earning money. Don't you think?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say like merch is widely applicable. They're the ways that we earn money.
They're the ways that we earn money.
I think Patreon and sponsors and AdSense are probably the most widely applicable.
But like products and plan sales and Twitch and everything, those are kind of more niche.
Yeah, and we're not as
experienced.
As experienced with this.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on. So balancing everything that we've talked about, let's like talk on that a little bit before we wrap up.
Because there's definitely a balance between like your monetization, mm-hmm. your channel growth, and
how sustainable it is. You can't have all of those. I mean, you can have one or maybe two, but you can't be like at the beginning, you can't be sustainable, good monetization, and good growth unless you're very lucky or skilled.
Yeah. I think in the beginning, growth is more important than monetization.
Yes.
Sustainability or growth is probably more important than sustainability in the beginning.
I agree.
Because like we were working our butts off for a really long time and it feels like we're not now, but then we remind ourselves like, oh yeah, we still work on weekends and from the time we wake up till the time we go to bed.
Yeah.
So we are still working our butts off compared to most people. And so sustainability in terms of like how much you work, I mean, I think that's something all YouTubers struggle with a little bit.
That's why but there's so many burnout videos nowadays.
I think in the beginning, growth should be what you focus on. When you're getting to the point where you foresee your ability to make the switch to full time, that's when monetization
kicks in.
Can kick in and become a bigger priority. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should ever monetize to the detriment of growth, because growth is a long-term thing. Any single sponsored video, that's a short-term thing.
And I think last comes sustainability. Because you also have to like think about like the sustainable methods of income. You need to like figure out how many videos you can make and balance your life in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one point that we're getting to now, like two and a half years out. But in general, like building up that library of content that will continue to bring in views, continue to bring in that growth, that's really important. And then diversify all of your incomes, not having everything in like all your eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are really important. And I think that's kind of mainly it. We went through it all.
Yeah. It only took us like 2 hours.
Yes. A little bit longer than we thought. We're like, oh man, we've been wanting to make this podcast for so long.
Yeah. It was going to be a video, and then we, you know, did it as a couple talks, and then it was going to be a podcast, and then it just wasn't happening. So I'm glad, because we do want to share the things that we've learned. You know, there's a lot of growing pains in the beginning.
We don't want people to experience the pain we experienced.
If there's something that we can, like a struggle we can help prevent, we want to help prevent it.
Yeah. And also, I think in general, there are so many awesome people out there. Like, you guys are awesome, and you guys have important knowledge, or you're funny. And there's like people that you can connect with online. And I think that YouTube is such an exciting place to be a part of the community. And I think it'd be great to get more people in on this and like build everyone up. I think that this is definitely like a rising tides type. Is that it?
Yeah, rising tides raises
all. I think this is a rising tides type of situation. A riding tide. And I think that like the more people that get into this, the better, the more like mainstream it'll be, the more legitimate it'll be. And I think that just good things will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So should we go back to normal podcast mode and do our thing of the week?
Yeah, let's go.
Might as well.
Let's do thing of the week. Okay. So my thing of the week is by far thermochromic ink. And I even said it correctly this time.
You did. You didn't say thermochromatic.
So our video for that was released a few days ago. And I'm just looking around all over the place.
We have it right here. Yeah, we have the controller. So if you haven't seen the video, we turned our controller into a mood ring using thermochromic ink.
It's amazing. It's so crazy to me that the magic of mood rings can just be like used by anyone and put on anything. It's like, what the heck? I could have a thermochromatic microphone. I could have a thermochromatic like remote.
Thermochromatic again. Oh, dang it. Yeah, and we did do it to our remote also.
We did do it to our remote. But it's such an interesting, accessible science thing that I thought was outside of our reach, but it's not.
Yeah, it is super cool and very addicting
to it's play very with addicting. I just like controller. Walk through our desk and I pick up. It's an Xbox 360 controller that we applied it to, for those of you who haven't seen it and who are listening to it and not watching.
Yes. We're just like petting it in adoration right now. Also because our fingerprints show up. So my thing of the week is it a new series or did we just newly discover it?
It's newly discovered. It's actually not that new.
Okay. So the Not That New series on the Bon Appetit channel. You guys have heard me talk about the Bon Appetit channel before.
It's so great.
I love Claire and I love Brad. But there's this series that they did that involved a larger group of people on the team. And it's called Make It Perfect or Making Perfect.
Making Perfect.
And it's where it's like a 5 or 6 or some number part series where they try to make the perfect pizza. Evan just held up a 6. Okay. 6 part series where they try to make the perfect pizza and they divide up each of the tasks between the people. So the first step is making the dough, and Claire has to figure out how to make the perfect dough. And she goes and is taught by these professional pizza dough makers, and it kind of continues for each part of the series, but it's also just like hilarious and it's great production value.
But the thing that
still
I love,
holding that like YouTube vibe.
Yeah, they strike such a good balance, and I'm so excited for the future of the platform. Like, because I know a lot of people fear companies coming in, but when Bon Appetit
just like does it so they just
get it. They hire the right people, they let them have the freedom, they let like good content be made.
Yeah.
And it just makes me hopeful.
Yeah. And they don't over polish it. They just like enable people to travel to Italy and like spend time and money on the perfect pizza sauce.
Yeah. I mean, like looking through the talk that we just gave, they're doing all the things very well.
Yes.
In terms of like consistency and.
Yes.
Like,
Bon Appetit probably went to our talk at Maker Faire.
Probably. Yeah. But like, I guess it's just like I see a lot of good things in what they do, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, but yeah, it's an awesome series. We'll link to it. We're in the middle of it right now. I think we're on episode 3.
And usual podcast will resume next Monday, where we have the topics and the games and story times and all of the fun things that you guys like. And we really appreciate you guys listening. And guys, share this around. I don't want this to just get hidden away or anything like that. Share this
one specifically.
Yeah, share this one in particular. Like this episode. you know, wherever you think might work best, but like share it on all of your socials, on any websites that you think might be interested, because I feel like this information in its entirety doesn't get shared often. Mm-hmm. And I think that like the whole story is so much more important than just like a single like tip or hack or whatever.
Yeah.
Especially the beginning part of this. I think that more people might need to hear the foundational stuff that we talked about. So
yeah.
Please and thank you.
Please and thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.